MacCast, Sunday, October 13th, 2013. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Well, I am super excited about today's show, actually. This is going to be a little bit of a different episode. I am actually currently on vacation, but you wouldn't know it because the MacCast doesn't stop. I actually recorded this episode right before I left town because I wanted to make sure you had something in your feed. Plus, I really wanted to get this guy on the podcast. This is a special episode with Josh DeLioncourt from the Maccessibility podcast, Maccessibility Roundtable podcast, also Maccessibility.net website. And we are going to catch up with Josh. It's been a couple of years since we've had him on, but Josh is a friend of the show. He is a blind Mac user, and he is pretty much my expert on the accessibility features in Mac OS X and also iOS. And with the update to iOS 7 being out, I wanted to get an update on all of the new features and functionality that is available in the accessibility settings. So there's some new things in there. We're also going to cover some of the older things because I think if you're not familiar with the accessibility features that are in iOS, you'll be amazed at the kinds of things that you control, the kinds of things that you can control, and the kinds of things that you can do with it. And there's a lot of advantages for any user of the operating systems. And I think you'll hear that in this episode. So very excited to have Josh with us to be talking about this stuff. But before we get into the interview, I do need to take a quick moment and thank one of my show sponsors. And it is Busy Mac, makers of BusyCal. I want to tell you about BusyCal. Actually, BusyCal is an awesome app. It's been my default calendar app on my Mac for years. And I transitioned completely away from Apple's built-in calendar app. And what was awesome about it was moving to BusyCal, it was seamless. And I never looked back. It imports all of your data, your information from calendar. It keeps it all in sync. And you can migrate back and forth. You still have the data in iCal, so you're not tied into moving to BusyCal. But again, you're probably going to be like me. You're not going to want to go back to it because it's got amazing features. It's like iCal, or I guess we just call it calendar now. It's like calendar on steroids. And it has support for all of your cloud-based stuff. So you've got iCloud, you've got Google Calendar support, you've got CalDAV support for any CalDAV servers you connect to. And now with version 2.5 of BusyCal, they've added in Exchange support. And if you're a user of BusyCal, if you already had version 2.0, the 2.5 update is free. So they're constantly updating and improving the application, and Exchange support was a big, huge new feature, and it's in the latest version. So if you're on Exchange, you can use BusyCal as well. It's just got a ton of great features, and you can fully customize the way of working with your calendar. So whereas calendar sort of locks you into the Apple way, which is fine, if you really want to be able to have full control of your calendar, take a look at BusyCal. One of my favorite features, and it really is a simple one, it's the ability to have a non-modal info panel. So just like in the old iCal, over in the sidebar, I can enter events, I can edit that information, I can click on something, and I don't have to pop up another window or a little dialogue to actually do something. I think on calendar, it's actually a couple extra clicks, right? You got to bring up the little pop-up, and then you got to click edit. No way, I just click on my event, I edit it. Could not be simpler. I really like it that way, and I never had to move away because of BusyCal. They also have cool scrolling features. You can scroll month to month. You can scroll through week views, and that has gesture support. So if you're on a trackpad or a magic mouse, you can use gestures to scroll through your calendar. You can scroll incrementally a week at a time. You just hold down the option key while you're scrolling. It's great when you get near the end of the month and you just want to roll over to that first week of the next month. You can customize the number of weeks that are shown in your month view. You can get to-dos in your calendar, and those are going to sync with your reminders. You can also show dated to-dos right on the calendar itself, so you can see when your stuff is due right inside your calendar. Another really cool feature a lot of people like, you know, when you get an alarm, so you set up a reminder, a calendar alarm, and you just need to snooze it. Well, on the default calendar, that's set to a fixed amount of time, I think 15 minutes. With BusyCal, you can actually customize that. You can change how long you want it to snooze. You get weather right inside your calendar, moon phases. You can add graphics to mark birthdays and holidays and special events. You can tweak it to your heart's delight. Do anything you want with it. It's the ultimate calendar app for your Mac. And they have a free 30-day trial. So if you want to try it out, you can head over to BusyMac.com. You can get all the information and details. You can download a free trial. You can also buy it on the Mac App Store. I just can't say enough about it. I'm so happy to have Busy Mac and Busy Cal as a sponsor of the MacCast. So please check it out, BusyMac.com. And a big thank you to them for their support of the MacCast. So let's go in and dive into accessibility in iOS 7 with Josh DeLionCourt. Hey, Josh, welcome back to the MacCast. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, it's been way too many years. I think it's been a couple years since we've had you on, and I'm glad you agreed to come back and do this, because this one's a pretty big update, not just for the community in general, but also for the accessibility features in iOS 7.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of work that's been done, a lot of new features and things.
So just because it's been so long since you've been on, I've already mentioned, you know, you have the website maccessibility.net, and you are the host of the Maccessibility Roundtable podcast, or one of the co-hosts, or I guess founder. You started it, right?
Yeah, and now you've got a group of people. I guess host. I kind of play the part of moderator or master of ceremonies or something like that. And it's kind of it's a round table, so it's almost a free for all. I just kind of keep the conversation moving, and we discuss accessibility of Apple products in general.
Yeah. And so for those people who maybe aren't familiar with you from some of the past MacCasts that we've done, can you just give everybody a little bit of your background? I mean, why you run the website, why you got into this stuff, and you know, how it all came about.
Well, as a lot of longtime Mac users, I, you know, started way back in the day on Apple II computers and that sort of thing, learned to program on them. Mm-hmm. Accessibility back in the 80s was fantastic on Apple products, and that kind of deteriorated in the 90s, as Apple kind of fell from grace and all that history. Was working on Windows for a long time, did a lot of development on Windows for several years. And then back in 2005, when Apple introduced VoiceOver on the Mac, I had been missing being a Mac user for quite a while. And so pretty much just a month or two after Tiger came out, which is when they debuted VoiceOver, I had a little Mac Mini and was learning how to use it and getting reaccustomed. And fell in love with that, because the Windows accessibility world is kind of a mess, and it's improved in some ways and continued to deteriorate in others. But I personally find the Mac way of doing things in accessibility a lot more to my taste, and of course it's not a lot of added expense. Screen readers on the Windows side are extremely expensive. I guess I should mention, for those who don't know, that I am a totally blind software developer. So I need a screen reader, which will read the, does what it says, reads the screen. It analyzes what's on the screen and gives voice feedback and lets you control the computer completely by keyboard. So on the Windows side, you're talking, those software products generally start at about $800 and go up from there on top of the cost of the computer that you've bought and that sort of thing. So, and the Apple builds all that in. And of course, 2009, they brought VoiceOver to the iPhone, and the iPad debuted with VoiceOver. And about a year ago, or was it 2 years ago now? I can't remember. I think it was 2 years ago. They introduced VoiceOver on the Apple TV. So, and all their iPods have VoiceOver. So they've pretty much, every product that Apple makes at this point, for the most part, except for the iPod Classic, because it's the old one, has voiceover technology built in. So it's accessible to blind people right out of the box. And that's really exciting.
That's very, very cool. And I just realized, you know, I probably should have, we probably should let people know. There might be some people actually listening. You know, I know accessibility, you know accessibility. I know a lot of Mac users are familiar with the term, but we probably should just explain in general what accessibility is. And I think I just said Mac accessibility, but I meant accessibility.
Accessibility is just it's sort of the colloquial term. It's also referred to as universal access. It's basically giving ways of interacting with, getting information into and out of technology products generally, although not exclusively, for people with disabilities. So probably the most widely understood form of accessibility in the way that we're using the term would be like closed captioning on videos. So for someone who's deaf and can't hear the dialogue in a film or whatever it is, the text appears at the bottom and they can read that. So that's, you know, a real basic form. Whereas something like a screen reader, like VoiceOver on Mac and iOS, you're looking at something a lot more complicated that's got to get information in, you know, two directions. Off the screen, this graphical user interface, and also let the user interact without using the mouse so much.
Right. Yeah. And as we go through this, I think people are going to begin to understand sort of the breadth of this topic. You know, like you said, a lot of people might be familiar with closed captioning. Maybe they know VoiceOver. But there's a really broad range of features and functionality and things that come under this compass of accessibility or universal access. And it does seem like the Mac and Apple, especially now, you mentioned a little bit about history. I don't want to ask you about that in a second, but especially now, Apple seems to have pretty good broad support across most of its platforms and operating systems. In some areas, as people will hear, Apple does a little bit better than others. But, you know, they're constantly, I think, trying to improve it. And that's sort of what's going on with iOS 7. They're adding some new features. But backing up a little bit, I did want to ask you, because you mentioned the history. Do you have an understanding, or, you know, just through all the stuff that you've done, I'm curious, do you know why Apple seems to have such a passion for accessibility? Is there something in their history? And then you mentioned, like, in the 90s, I'm assuming that's just the classic thing where everything sort of fell apart for Apple in the 90s, and then bringing it back. I mean, was this something that was a Steve Jobs thing? Was it a certain engineer? Do you have any idea?
I can answer that a couple of ways. One, as far as the 90s go, that was basically just Apple was kind of deteriorating, and there's a lot of things that kind of went down the same road. We've heard the same kinds of stories, but it was basically third-party support was deteriorating. At that point, all the accessibility of Apple products in the 80s, as great as it was and as much as Apple was supporting it, was being developed by what we call assistive tech companies. So companies were developing screen readers. They were developing, you know, hardware, voice synthesizers, all these kinds of things that worked in Apple products. As Apple kind of declined as a platform for a good portion of the 90s, they lost a lot of that support. There was a screen reader that I used a bit through the 90s called Outspoken for Mac. Mm-hmm. And I did use that a bit through the 90s, but it started out really good. But as Apple's market share kind of plummeted, it got less and less, you know, fewer updates and supported the system less and less. And then when Apple announced it was going to OS 10, they discontinued it. So I think in doing VoiceOver, it's kind of the classic thing we see time and time again with Apple kind of taking control of their own destiny, and, you know, we want to make sure this is available to users, and the only way to be absolutely sure of that is do it ourselves,
right?
Kind of thing. So I think there's that mentality. There are stories that I have heard from various people throughout the visually impaired community that that Steve Jobs did care quite a bit about accessibility, and I know one person one person I respect a lot. I don't want to say too much about them unless I really shouldn't be saying this, but mentioned that they had firsthand knowledge that early on, when Steve Jobs was still very young and Apple kind of first hit it huge with the Apple II, He was giving to a lot of blindness charities in India, where he had spent a lot of time. So
right.
it was obviously something, I think, on his mind anyway. I personally can't attest for that story, but I think it's probably true.
Yeah, I've always kind of, and I, you know, I have no proof of this and no evidence of this, but I always also kind of assumed that because Apple is so often about the whole user experience, that, I mean, this is part of that general ease of use, and it completes the user experience, right? You're not excluding a large chunk of users. You're trying to provide the most functionality, the most access for the most number of your customers and people. So I it feels like just something that would be inherent in Apple's DNA regardless.
Yeah, I agree. And especially since Jobs came back in the late 90s, that it seems like the type of company he was trying to build with that focus on the user experience definitely lends itself to this type of work as well.
Right. And so the other thing I wanted to ask you about, because you mentioned, you know, you are a developer, before we dive into the iOS 7 features specifically, is how is it developing using, you know, VoiceOver and accessibility? I mean, does Apple have good support in Xcode? I'm just curious, you know, being visually impaired, you know, are there better tools for programming in OS X, or is it a tricky thing?
Like any developer, everybody's got their own tastes. So right. For me personally, I love Xcode. My experience on Windows was in various forms of Visual Studio. And early on, we had some pretty good accessibility on there. As Visual Studio became a more and more complicated program, you could still do things, but it was getting more and more complicated and more difficult to work in Visual Studio. Accessibly. So when I had moved over to the Mac and started playing with Xcode, especially early on, it had some rough edges. It was accessible to a point. Interface Builder was kind of the weakest link there, where it was extremely right. difficult to use Interface Builder, if you could do anything at all really with it, with VoiceOver early on. Right. However, in the last couple of years, since they released Xcode 4, which I believe was 2011, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yes, it's been a few years.
They have really put a lot of emphasis on it. And every single time there is even just a minor point update to Xcode, it seems like they've improved the accessibility. And we can use Interface Builder now, and we can, we can do, pretty much anything. You can, every once in a while, you'll find out they forgot to put a label for VoiceOver on this icon or something like that. You might run into a situation like that, but it's actually really solid now and improving all the time. So I am extremely happy as a Mac developer with Xcode.
Cool. Yeah, and actually, Interface Builder's kind of gone away, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Well, it's like built into Xcode now. It's not a separate app anymore. So they still call it Interface Builder when you select an interface file in the in the left hand column there in the Project Builder. You get kind of the built in Interface Builder now, but they still refer to it that way for whatever reason.
Yeah, the reason I forget what they call it now. It's like scenes or.
They have storyboards you can still use XIB files, which is like a like the old NIB files for interfaces, but in an XML format before they get compiled. So, which is mostly what I deal with. I haven't played too much with the storyboards for iOS.
Okay, so you're still working in the NIB stuff. And then the only other thing, I guess, I'm curious: do you get a lot of people asking you for help in making their third-party apps accessible? Do you do that, some of that kind of work as well as programming your own stuff?
We get that once in a while. More often than not, it's myself or Maxcessibility or just the blindness community in general, kind of going to the third-party developers and saying, "Hey, there's some problems with your app. Can you fix this?" And this is something that's really great about what Apple's done, because it's almost completely the reverse from any other platform, particularly Windows, in that Apple's set this up so that the developers of any app have the tools to make their app accessible with VoiceOver, whereas on the Windows side, generally speaking, it's sort of layers on layers on layers. So you have a screen reader and you have a third-party app, and you need those to both communicate with each other. And usually there's nothing much that the third-party developer can do with their app to make it better. There's a few kind of standards they can follow, but in general, it's extremely difficult for them to interact with the screen reader. So what you have is these incredibly complex scripting languages where someone has to write another layer that the screen reader will use to be able to effectively interact with an application. So It gets extremely complicated, extremely difficult. And then, of course, when that third-party app changes, the scripts break and you don't have access to it until somebody updates the scripts. So that can be a huge mess.
Kind of on the fragile, it sounds like.
Yes, exactly. And on the and I can speak a lot about that because for a while that's what I did for a living, was write those scripts to keep the screen reader running. So, on the other end of the spectrum with Apple, they're putting all of these really great tools, really simple tools and techniques built into OS X and iOS that third-party developers can hook into. And usually, if they take the time to do it, they come back with, wow, that was a whole lot easier than I thought it was going to be. And that's what we want to hear, because we want to be able to use the apps. And as a result, there's far more accessible applications for OS X and iOS than available than there ever was on Windows. So
that's cool. That's cool. Well, that's probably a good lead-in to start to talk about some of these features that are in iOS, and specifically iOS 7. And I figured the easiest way to approach this would probably just be to sort of work our way down the accessibility settings and all the different options and things that are in there. So for people who don't know where it is, if you go into Settings General, there is an accessibility section, and then within that, it opens up this whole sort of world of all these different kinds of controls and settings and things like that. And, you know, one we've been talking about already, and one of the first ones under the, and they have them grouped into little categories. So you have your visual controls and text and motion, and then hearing controls, physical and motor controls, things like that. And so the first one, I think, right at the top is visual controls. And we've already talked a little bit about voiceover. Voiceover is pretty mature, I think, from Apple's perspective. But I'm curious, is there anything specifically new in voiceover in iOS 7?
There's a lot of new stuff. You know, can I just rewind just for one quick second?
Yeah, and point
out that one nice thing for iOS 7, just in terms of Apple overall and their accessibility efforts, is that they bumped the accessibility options way up on the general screen. That used to be buried way at the bottom. And they've really, that was kind of a problem, because you went into, for example, you're a visually impaired person, and you walk into an AT&T store or something like that, and you want to play with an iPhone. You've heard about them, and now you want to see how VoiceOver works. You've got to explain to somebody, you got to go into settings, go into general, scroll. and that could be a problem if somebody doesn't really know what they're looking for.
Sure.
And the fact that they increased the visibility of it is, I thought, was actually really, really exciting, because it's making people more aware of it. It's making it easier to get to.
Yeah, it's on the first page. You got, I think, Siri, Spotlight, a new text feature, which actually is also helpful from the accessibility standpoint, and then accessibility.
So VoiceOver is, it's the screen. I'm sorry?
I didn't mean to cut you off. I was saying, what have they tweaked in VoiceOver?
All right, so there's a lot of new things. A lot of small things, kind of like they've done with the user interface. There's been some kind of refining and improvement of just kind of little subtle things, first off. So you'll get a lot more context to things it says. So, for example, when you're on your home screen and you've got maybe your Reminders app and it's got the badge, VoiceOver lets you know what that badge represents if it can. So before, it might just say, one new item if there was something waiting in your Reminders. Now it says one task due today. Been a lot of little interface tweaks like that, where it's kind of giving you a little more context for the information it's presenting, which is nice.
Making it a little more human understandable too, sort of like they've done with the notification center and the what's that new summary view? What do they call that thing? The today view, right?
Today, yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Cool.
So you got stuff like that. They've improved things just from like a usability standpoint. So for example, in previous versions of iOS, to bring down the notification center, what you had to do with VoiceOver was touch the status bar. So you'd like touch the clock, for example, and then do a three-finger swipe down the screen, and that would pull down the notification center, because VoiceOver uses a completely different set of gestures right. than the phone than are usually used to operate the phone. And you can still do that, and to bring up the control center, you touch the status bar and you do a three-finger swipe upward. So but what they've done to that was incredibly awkward, particularly if you're moving around and trying to use your phone one-handed. I mean, imagine right. I mean, it's basically impossible. Yeah. You got to hold it in one hand and do it with the other. Okay, so one of the things, like another small feature, just to kind of illustrate the point, when you know they've improved usability in that they've made these special regions, and if you're using an iPhone, because that's kind of the easiest to demonstrate this, right. One is right above the home key, and one is right below the kind of that little cut for the speaker right. earpiece area. And if you kind of touch right on the edge so that you're half on and half off the screen, VoiceOver gives you a special little sound that it starts to play, and that lets you know, hey, you're in one of these special areas. And then once you've heard that sound, you can just do a just like a sighted user would, a one swipe finger swipe up or down to get to notification center or control center. So lots it's a neat way of getting around the gestures issue. So that works really nice. So they've improved some of the usability things like that. One of the huge new features that I absolutely love, and which is going to sound very strange, so I'm going to give a little bit of the background first. A lot of VoiceOver users, because of the touchscreen keyboard, have a hard time typing, entering text quickly on their device.
Right.
Now, that's improved a bit because we have things like dictation now and stuff like that, but I personally, this has not been an issue for me. I've got really good muscle memory, and it's really easy for me to visualize things, largely, I think, because I lost my vision at the age of 6. So I have plenty of memories of what things look like, and it's very, very easy for me to visualize things. So I am not terribly slow on the keyboard, but a lot of VoiceOver users are.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I'm slow on the keyboard.
All right. Well, there you go. So and we've seen a lot of third-party apps that try to address that. There's an app called Flexi. There's an app called Embraille. These apps that kind of give you alternative ways of entering text, and then you can copy and paste it into apps, or you can text right from them or tweet right from them, things like that. So there's definitely a need for something like this. Yeah. And what they've done is they've added a feature in VoiceOver that anytime you're in a position to enter text, you can activate this special mode, and it's handwriting mode, and kind of harkens back, I think, to the old Newton days and some of the wow. handwriting things that they've done in China. So basically, once you've got it in handwriting mode, you draw the print letters on the screen, and it as you draw them, it enters them. So you don't have to worry about where you are on the screen. Doesn't matter how big or small they are. You just start writing them in, and it converts your handwriting. The drawback, obviously, is not all blind people know the shapes of the letters, but I think this is definitely some incentive to do. And I mean, plenty do. A lot of people lost their vision late in life. A lot of blind children are taught letters, you know, by use of like, you know, those puzzles that they make for kids that have all different letters, shapes, and things like that. So there are plenty that do know the shapes as well. And mm-hmm. this is a really nice way of entering text, and has some other benefits as well. So, for example, I use a passcode on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
One of the drawbacks is that if you are unlocking your phone with a passcode as a VoiceOver user, you're not using earbuds, you're basically broadcasting your passcode to the world, because every time right. you touch a number, VoiceOver has to let you know what number you're touching. So you can use the handwriting to enter your passcode and enter it silently without anyone knowing, which is also very nice.
I guess Touch ID helps in that regard, too.
Yeah, I wish I had a 5S. I do not. Next year is my upgrade cycle, so cool. I'll be waiting for the next one. But yeah.
So is that something, is that the handwriting entry, is that something that is just automatically turned on once you've enabled VoiceOver with the standard keyboard?
It's not. What you need to do is VoiceOver has a feature called the Rotor, and basically it lets you put VoiceOver into all different kinds of modes. So that, you know, for example, there's a character by character mode where you can kind of navigate a piece of text or the name of an icon or something and spell it out. There's a word by word. Right. There's all kinds of, you can move heading by heading in Safari when you're on a web page, that kind of thing. There's a whole section in the VoiceOver settings called Rotor Settings, and you have to go in there and turn handwriting on so that it's one of the settings available.
One of the rotor options.
In the rotors. Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it does do a lot of other things too. Just one other kind of neat thing that it does is, and I can see a few sighted users wishing they had something like this as well. On the home screen of the iPhone, if you put VoiceOver in the handwriting mode, you can start typing letters in with their drawing letters with the handwriting mode, and it will search all of your home screens, all of your folders, and start presenting you with a list of just the apps that match the letters that you are entering. So you know, type in an S, you're going to get all the apps starting with S, then follow that with an A, and now you've got Safari, and you can find apps a lot quicker that way. It's almost a spotlight type thing, but even a little better and a little quicker. So
yeah, because you don't even have to pull down to go to the spotlight menu.
Yeah, exactly. So it's pretty cool. Neat.
The rotor, I just want to comment on really quickly because I'm sure we'll jump over that one, but that's one of those controls that I wish other like apps and things would sort of pick up on. I think it's one of the coolest things for people who don't know what it is. Once you have VoiceOver turned on, it's a way of quickly like sort of changing, like you were saying, changing different modes or different settings. And the way you do it is you take two fingers. I usually do my thumb and my forefinger on the screen. And you just pretend like almost like you're grabbing a little dial, but with your fingers on the screen, and you sort of rotate it, right? Like you're turning a dial to switch between different settings, and it'll jump, like you said, between those different modes. And I'm frankly surprised that some apps haven't taken that on as sort of a quick way to, you know, change settings. I can think of like drawing apps or things like that. I remember there were some tablet apps for, you know, like doing Photoshop drawing, like Canvas and stuff like that. I think Wacom had a thing where you could, you know, press and hold and it would bring up the sort of on-screen dial, and then you could select a different region to change your modes. It's almost like that, in my opinion. And it's, I just find it interesting that no one's really, I haven't seen that leveraged in any apps really as a quick sort of settings change. You know, this little two finger, hey, turn a dial.
Yeah, but it is really, really, really neat. So one of the biggest for lack of a better term, really one of the genius features of VoiceOver when it came out was because that was one of the big things is we're going to need to be able to not just explore the screen but kind of get fine information out of it. You know, right. How does this thing spelled? How's that? And without learning a thousand different gestures to accomplish this, it's really just an ingenious breakthrough. Yeah. Really.
And I guess you can enable it with something like VoiceOver, because like you said, the standard sort of gestures get changed a little bit, right? So I guess in the case of, you know, we already have a two finger pinch zoom in and out, so you might have a hard time, you know, distinguishing between a sort of a rotor control versus a zoom in and in or out, or some of the other two finger gestures that are associated with certain apps.
Yeah, it could be. And I mean, we do have some of those gestures, but they definitely behave differently. For example, like you're mentioning the pinch in and out, and if you have VoiceOver running, that actually selects or deselects text, right, based on what the rotor setting is and things like that. So
yeah. And you know, for you, like I think you have to double tap when VoiceOver is enabled to actually, you know, click on or tap on something, right?
Yeah. You touch it. If you touch it, it just lets you know what you're touching, and then double tap will activate it as if you did a single tap. So
yeah. So cool. So we were talking about, I kind of got us off track there a little bit.
That's all right. So yeah, you were asking what else is new in VoiceOver.
I think we just went over your favorite feature.
Yeah, by far. I mean, the handwriting thing is just amazing. Other than that, I think mostly, you know, we've mostly seen a lot of tweaking, a lot of small things. We've got some more control over, you know, having high quality voices and things along that line.
Have they added broader language support this time around? They tend to do that.
Yeah, I didn't notice any additional languages. I think that's pretty much stayed static the last couple of upgrades. I think VoiceOver supports something like 20, I want to say 25 languages now, something along those lines. So they haven't really added too much to that in recent times. So,
I know one of the new features of Siri for like people's names and things like that is, you know, if she pronounces something wrong, you can sort of change the phonetics. Is Apple ever given the ability to, I know they have the phonetic settings, right, in terms of the kind of feedback, but I mean, very often the voice will kind of say things weird, if you know what I yeah. mean. Like, do you have any ability to sort of tweak or change that? Be like, ah, no, I want you to pronounce that word a little bit differently because that's hard to understand.
Yeah, we don't on iOS. That's a very common feature in screen readers, and we have that with VoiceOver on the Mac, but that has not come around to yet. iOS. And, you know, honestly, as much as I've heard lots of people, you know, wish for that feature and that kind of thing, I'm finding that the more time we don't have it, the, you know, kind of the less I care about it. You know, back in the day, and some of this I'm sure maybe just has to do with age, but, you know, I remember the old Apple II days when, you know, the computer couldn't pronounce anything correctly and you just got used to it. It's like listening to someone with an accent. So it doesn't bother me all that much. And it's probably not, you know, I don't ever use it on the Mac anymore. I just kind of like, oh, I know it says that word strange and you get used to it.
Yeah, so, exactly. So exactly. I'm looking at the screen here. I'm just kind of following along with you. The navigate images thing, has that always been there?
Yeah, that's always been there.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that.
Mostly for websites and things like that. So just basically, do you want us to ignore images that appear on the screen if they don't have a label for VoiceOver, or do you want us to let you know it's there anyway? And right. So that's what it does. Actually, you know, another, since you mentioned that one, they did do something really neat with imaging though on VoiceOver in general for when you're, example, from when you're taking pictures or receiving pictures from friends. Like, a lot of people don't think about that. You know, the blind people, just like anybody else, would like to capture some of these moments and share it with sighted family and friends and things. Even if they can't, you know, see it, they're there in the moment and they want to share something. I go to Comic-Con every summer, and you know, my extended family and things are very much into sci-fi and fantasy type stuff. And I, you know, got fine things there I want to share with them. So you do end up taking pictures. And what one of the neat things in VoiceOver now is that you get a lot more information about pictures that you have received or have taken. So for example, you know, obviously VoiceOver is not going to sit there and tell you, you have just taken a picture of, you know, fill in the blank, Superman at Comic-Con right. or whatever. But what it will tell you is, hey, this picture is really blurry, or this picture is too dark, or this picture is very clear and crisp and bright and whatever. And you get feedback like that now in iOS 7, which if you do care about taking pictures and sharing that with the sighted world, that helps because right. you'll take it and know, okay, that was a terrible picture. I need to do that again.
I thought I had read somewhere, too, that they'll use, because it has the, I think iOS 7 and the new phones, at least. I don't know if this is exclusive to the new phones, where they can, with the new processor, get multiple sort of focal points. And it'll recognize faces like your digital SLR cameras will, you know, to focus on different faces. And I thought I had read somewhere that it now gives you feedback to let you know, hey, there's, you know, three people in this photo. So
yeah, they've expanded that a bit. We've actually had that with VoiceOver, I believe, since iOS, I think, 5.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, where it would tell you, and I think in that one it would let you know if it saw any faces. Now you can, you know, you can kind of see, okay, there's, you know, here's a face on this side of it and there's a face on that side of it when you're taking a picture. I think once the picture's taken, I don't believe you get any of that
right.
feedback.
But I mean, just in terms of helping you frame and know you've got people in your shot.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
That's cool. Yeah, I had no idea. I had no idea that feature existed. Very, very cool. So that was pretty much VoiceOver. Wow, we got a lot still to get through. So then there's a whole other set of controls that are sort of for people who are maybe not, who have partial sight, right?
Yeah, and that's where we run into a lot of challenges with iOS 7. The look of it is very difficult for low vision users at this point. hoping that's going to change in time. Apple does give you some control over, increasing contrast and that sort of thing. But there's kind of, I think, two sides to this problem, because on the one side, I do think Apple needs to kind of provide some more options and some more ways to customize it to make it easier for low vision users to see what they're doing on the screen. On the other side, for many years through all kinds of desktop and mobile operating systems, low vision users have been using touchstones for getting around. They can see, okay, there's this real dark shadow around this button or whatever it is. I can use that as a landmark, as a kind of a place marker. I can see that even if I can't see the button real well. Right. Things like that. Well, all of that has been turned on its head with iOS 7. So there's a certain amount of, they're going to have to completely change the way they use their device as well. So I think there's a little bit on both work to be done on kind of on both sides. Is the low vision users are going to have to learn new ways of doing things, and Apple's going to have to come up with some new tools to make the operating system easier for them to see.
Yeah, it's interesting when you bring this stuff up. There's things that you don't really think about. I mean, I've mentioned I don't like the fact that we don't have button borders on a lot of things, right? It's just now just the text. Mm-hmm. And I guess you can do muscle memory sort of stuff and get used to the regions, but I'm thinking about, like a user, even somebody that has maybe more severe forms of dyslexia or something like that. That could just be a nightmare, because you wouldn't know maybe what something said, or, you got to kind of learn that. And if it's the first time you're seeing the interface, that could be, is that a button? Is that just some text? What is that?
Yeah. And I think what we're going to see with this is a similar thing that we did with iOS in general. So the iPhone was introduced in 2007. VoiceOver came along in 2009, and there was a lot of people, back in 2007, a lot of blindness organizations and the visually impaired community in general, really upset. Here's this cool new phone. We can't use it at all, and it's got this new touchscreen that we can't fathom how to use this. And of course, 2 years later, here's the phone. Here's VoiceOver, and with all this amazing new technology that Apple has developed to give access to that. I think for low vision users, I expect we will see something along the same lines. Okay, here is this new OS. There's going to be severe problems for low vision users. And of course, that's going to vary depending on their low vision problems. Some will have more issues than others. And now Apple's going to have to focus on, okay, get the feedback from those users. Where are the areas they're having problems? And work to make some sort of similar tool for them, like VoiceOver, but from a visual standpoint, let's make some tool that maybe brings back some of those, like the borders you're talking about, some of the shadows, or does something completely different to accentuate different regions of the screen with more contrast or whatever it is. And I think that's going to be the next logical step for Apple.
Right. The other thing to know about this, these accessibility settings, is there's a lot of features in here that actually are a benefit to all users. I call them, some of these for me are the I'm getting old features, right? So, like the zooming, if you need to have the text zooming, you can turn that on. Things like speaking selections, those settings are in here, and I turn this on right away on my devices. Because we have this on the Mac, right, where you can select some text and you can right click and you can use the speech services to actually have that read to you. Sometimes I just want to save time. Maybe I'm in the car. I don't want to bother with something. I just want to, select all the text in a web page or something like that and have it read to me.
Exactly. And Apple's does a really good job of, kind of repurposing some of the accessibility technology they come up with for a wider consumer base as well. So,
right. And I love, and like you were saying earlier, the high quality voices, the ability to download those now. And I like for English voices, I like the Australian English voice the best.
That's the one I use as well. That's my favorite as well. Yep. Easiest to understand, and I love the accent. So
yeah, it's great. So you can go turn that on, download. I'd recommend downloading the high quality voice, even though it takes up a little more storage. I think it's like 200-300K or something, or megabytes.
Yep.
And then you can play around with the sort of speak speech rate. But once you have speak selection turned on, then in almost any app, you select the text, and when that little contextual menu comes up, you get the option to speak that. So I really actually like that feature a lot. And then some of the other low vision stuff is the larger type. And that's actually what I wanted to point out there is this is what Apple calls in iOS 7 dynamic type, right? That's kind of a new feature, but it's something that has to be enabled by developers, correct?
Yes. And we have not seen a lot of that yet, as far as I know. Obviously, I can't see if they're using it or not.
But right.
From what I've heard from low vision users is that so far, not a lot of people using it, which is to be expected. They introduce something new like that, we're not going to see a lot of adoption right out the gate. So
right. And what this does is it's actually accessible in two different places, and it's the same setting. They actually have it at the top level of the general settings, I think. Yeah, general text size, which is right above accessibility. And then if you go into accessibility, they call it, I don't know why they call it something different. They call it larger type. But I played with it, and when you change the setting, it changes exactly in the two places. The one difference, I guess, with the one that's under accessibility is you can make the type even larger. They call it larger dynamic type, and that's just a toggle switch. And what dynamic type does is if it's enabled in the app and supported in the app, all of the elements within that, or all of the text within that app, be it menu items or labels or all those things are dynamically adjusted larger depending upon your setting, and you can move a slider back and forth and adjust it smaller or larger. So this was one that I did turn on, or slide up, just because, again, my eyes are getting older. It's harder to see, an iPhone screen. So that can help a little bit. And then for those people who don't like the new font, you've got bold text in here too. So you can make the font a little bit bolder if you're having trouble reading that. And that's you mentioned the contrast thing, right? They have this increased contrast because we're using all this transparency.
Mm-hmm.
As near as I can tell, there's a couple of these features I think they haven't taken far enough, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like the increased contrast thing, and I think that's what you were alluding to with the, with the low vision users.
Yeah, that's been kind of the general consensus from low vision users, from what I've heard, is that the contrast feature is a good start, but it's not adjustable. It's not. It doesn't go far enough for a lot of users. It helps some users quite a bit, but there's low vision is one of those things. This is one of the hardest groups to cater to, and will always be that way, because low vision covers a huge range of issues and degrees of vision loss. So what works for one person is not at all going to work for the next, and I think on the contrast thing, Apple likes to keep things simple, but I don't think just a on-off switch is going to work in this case. I think they're going to have to expand that.
Right. Well, and speaking of that on-off switch, so something I didn't notice right away, but when I went into the accessibility features, they now have the ability. I didn't notice that Apple had completely taken on-off sort of labels away. So I think we used to have on the little toggle switches, say on or off on either side, if I'm remembering
right.
Maybe I'm not under iOS 6. But now it's just this sort of green slider. And then I thought, oh, well, if I'm colorblind, this might not be all that helpful as a visual cue. And so you can turn on but all it really adds is this little subtle, tiny, again, like a one or a zero on either side of the toggle. And I think I'm with you. It seemed like it's not quite far enough, probably, for some users.
Yes, and I do expect all of these things. I one of the things that has been talked about in many, many areas, not just accessibility, is that, iOS 7 is a huge departure from the previous versions. The system's been rethought and redesigned. This was going to happen no matter what. And we're going to, I have no doubt that it's going to be refined over a few versions, but it's going to be a painful transition for some users.
Right. Right. Well, I know this probably isn't, this next area we're getting into probably isn't, or maybe is your area expertise, the hearing stuff.
Yeah, I can't speak too much about that. And I don't remember, I don't believe they've added anything too much new in there.
There's, supposedly hearing aid stuff's supposed to be, or was at least they were advertising that as some new stuff, some better support for hearing aids.
Yeah, they might have expanded that a bit. I believe that they started introducing that in iOS 6, I believe, but they might have expanded that a bit. But yeah, there are some stuff in there, some Bluetooth support. They've also got you know, things that have been in there for a while, like the mono audio feature. That basically sends the same, mixes the audio signals down and sends to both, you know, like both sides of your earbuds or whatever, the same signal so that you can hear if you've got hearing loss on one side and that kind of thing.
Yeah. A couple of people have asked me about this hearing aid thing because there's supposedly this new hearing aid mode. And I don't know, again, I don't know if that's really new or just something that Apple was really sort of promoting. And all I could ever do was sort of say, my guess is that, you know, knowing my grandmother had a hearing aid for a long time and she kind of had to have a special phone that, you know, didn't offset the hearing aid. So I'm assuming there's some sort of audio adjustments that are made if you're wearing a hearing aid so that you can better use like your phone and the built-in speakers.
Well, I could be completely wrong on this, but I believe there is some support where if you've got like a hearing aid that it supports Bluetooth, you can transmit the audio to your hearing aid, I believe.
Yeah, there's definitely a Bluetooth setting in there, and then there's also just a little toggle switch that says it improves audio quality with some hearing aids. And that's what people have been asking me is, well, what do I need a special kind of hearing aid? And I think you do. I think you need some sort of hearing aid that kind of supports this. And I don't know what's special about it, though. So if someone out there is listening to us and can maybe clue me in at least, you know, send in some feedback because I'm really curious about that feature. Another one, as I was just poking around in here, and I don't know if you know, Josh, but there's a whole category of subtitles and captioning that I don't think I noticed before. And it's funny because, again, getting back to some of my old man stuff is that I like when I watch movies, especially if I'm, you know, doing them on my Apple TV or AirPlay or something like that. I don't have a really good like surround sound system. So if the audio is in like 5.1, my system really doesn't support that. So very often I'll have a hard time hearing movies without having to crank the volume way up. Mm-hmm. So I actually like to turn on closed captioning or what do they call it? SDH.
There seems to be so many names for it now, and just agree on one, people.
But it's subtitles for something. I forget what the acronym stands for, but basically meaning that, hey, if you just have a hard time hearing, here's subtitles for you. But it looks like you can really control those, and I don't remember having this much control over the subtitles. Like, you can go in there, and there's all kinds of different styles, and they have these little presets in there. So you can do large type, classic, which looks more like what you would normally see on your television. There's sort of the default mode, which is that Apple look, which is the, I don't know if you know, but Apple likes to put this little rounded corner oval that's, you know, semi-transparent with it's gray with white text on top of it. And so you can get subtitles that look like that. But then you can even go in and set up your own styles. And I noticed they got tons of controls in here. So you can like change the font, the size, the color of the font, the colors of your background, how opaque or transparent your background is, the text transparency, the edge of the text and things like that. It like goes really, really in depth. And then you can sort of save those presets. And I think once you've enabled this, then anytime you have a video that has closed caption support, that will come up with sort of your preset. And they even have a cool little button where you can kind of preview it, you know, what it will look like once you've set up your style that you like full screen. And I don't remember that being there before, but I might have just missed it.
Yeah, well, and I think a lot of that, things like that, we see as technology matures as well. Because I know, you know, for example, you go far enough back with the closed captioning, back, you know, 10 or 15 years, the way that tended to be done for digital media was that a collection of images that were the text that was going to appear superimposed on the video were included rather than, you know, text that could be altered, the font and the background and that sort of thing. So, you know, technology is improving and then giving us some more options as well. So that may have something to do with it.
Yeah. And then Another feature I think a lot of people don't know about is guided access.
Yeah, that's been there for at least since
new, but I just wanted to point it out real quick.
Yeah, it works really well. It's really great for particularly in schools, if you're working with maybe autistic children and that sort of thing. My mother works in special ed with the learning disabled, and features like that are invaluable and that sort of thing, because you're basically helping the child kind of keep focus on certain areas of the screen, or preventing them from, you know, leaving something, you know, an app or something that they need to stay in to work and keep them from getting distracted.
Yeah. So it's guided access, the way it works is kind of really cool. Again, it's another one of these that changes how the gestures work once you've enabled it. So you turn it on, and I think the default action, although you can change it, is to go into an application. So you open up the app that you want, say, the child to work with or you want to have on the screen, and then you triple tap the home button. And you can set a passcode so that you can't get in or out of the mode without entering a passcode, I believe. And it basically disables the home button. You can also disable a number of the other buttons, like the volume, sleep, wake, some of the touch and motion controls you can disable. But then also it puts the app into sort of this mode where you circle the areas on the screen that you want, I think, to block out. Is that right? If I'm remembering how this feature works, right?
I'm not sure, but I believe that's correct.
Yeah. It's either the areas you want to block out or the areas you want to make active. I think it's you circle the areas you want to block out, and then once it's gone, and then you hit start, and then now the app is in that mode, and you can't get out of the app. You can't tap on certain areas. So if you want to make sure they stay in the app and aren't able to go back to, say, like a menu screen or an option screen, you could block out the button that returns to that area. So then you don't have to worry about where they might be touching on the screen. You can sort of keep them, like you said, in the areas that you want them to work with. So it's kind of a cool little thing. And, again, it's another one of these features that's in accessibility, but has some applications for, you know, I think of parents with infants and stuff like that. If they want to sit them down with an app and want to make sure that they're not, you know, going out of the app somewhere else or getting
deleting their email.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it has some pretty neat benefits. So it's good for people to know, you know, all these features that exist there and what they can do with this stuff. That's pretty, pretty cool. And so then I guess a further extension of that, and I think this is another area where Apple has expanded accessibility in iOS 7, is with some of the physical and motor controls. Specifically, the new thing, I think, is the switch controls. I mean, they were probably in there before, or were they not?
No, this is a new thing. This is new. It's new in iOS. It's going to be in Mavericks as well, Apple said, at WWDC. And it's very neat. So if you're someone who is very, very severely impaired in terms of mobility, you can't operate the screen or a mouse or whatever, this will cycle through elements on the screen, and you can have a switch device. So it depends on the level of your disability. A switch device might be just a little handheld thing with a button on it, and you can press the button. Or if you're, maybe like a quadriplegic or something like that, and all you can really do is maybe blow air through a straw. They've got switch controls that can detect when you're blowing air through or sucking air back through the straw and things like that. So it basically cycles through visually on the screen. You can see, okay, this control has focus now, this control has focus, and it'll cycle through them. And then you can dig your way down. So it might say, okay, do you want the keyboard? And it might show you that the keyboard has focus, and you would hit the switch, and then it would say, okay, you want the keyboard. So now we're going to go through the letters on the keyboard, and it cycles through those, and you can type something out by hitting the switch every time the letter you want is highlighted. And it sounds really tedious to someone that doesn't need to do that, but if that's the only way you can use a device, it's a godsend. So.
Right, yeah. Yeah. And something that was cool when I heard about this feature, because I was in the developer program and this came up, it actually has a bunch of different kinds of switches that you can set up. So there's, you know, external switches like you're talking about, which would be devices and things that you connect or that interface with the iPhone, I'm assuming using Bluetooth or maybe even just through the Lightning cable. But then also you can use the screen as a switch, I think, you know, just sort of general tap the screen and assign an action or a control to that. But then they also have the ability to use the FaceTime camera to detect head movement. Which is
that I was not aware of. That's very cool, actually.
Yeah. So I turned this on just to try it out to see how it works. And it does exactly like you're describing. You know, it starts cycling through elements on the screen. And then you, so you could connect, you know, a, you know, move my head to the left movement to say a tap gesture, and then move my head to the right movement to some other gesture. I ended up just giving myself whiplash pretty much. But again, to somebody who has limited mobility, you know, like you said, this is a huge feature. And I just thought it was really cool because it was like, oh, it's actually doing like head motion tracking using the front facing camera, which was just from a technology standpoint is really cool.
It is really cool. And, you know, this to me, you know, not to get, you know, all fanboy or whatever, but this is the type of thing that I don't understand when you see, you know, these other companies like Samsung wave your hand to take a picture. And it's like that's pretty useless to most people. And I think everyone kind of agrees it was sort of just a silly gimmick. But this is the same kind of technology, but used in a really great way, a really helpful way. And I think Apple really excels at finding practical uses for some of these.
I mean, hopefully they get to the point where they can make it even finer and more nuanced than, you know, simply a head movement. If they can get to the point where the FaceTime camera is good enough to say do eye tracking or something like that. I mean, that would be a huge step forward.
A lot of neat stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then another feature that's been around for a while that, again, it's one of those features that I know, you know, people use for accessibility, but also just people use mainly to get around broken home buttons is the assistive touch. I call it the little on-screen dot.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with this one. So, what you can do is when you turn on assistive touch, it gives you a way to set up gestures, various gestures that where, say, you had limited ability for performing certain gestures, you know, like a three-finger gesture or a four-finger gesture, some of the more complex gestures. You can actually record like macros that would, you know, once you've enabled the feature, so you tap on the little dot and then it gives you this little pop-up menu and you can access the home button, you can access Siri. You can, when you go into the device, you can set up and access various controls like lock screen, volume up and down. And then it goes even deeper where you can just tap a button and it will create a shake gesture on the phone, or tap a button and it'll do the screenshot. So, you know, say you had a really hard time doing the hold the home button and the sleep wake button at the same time to take a screenshot. You can use this menu, this assistive touch menu, to just drill down with single taps. Basically, it lets you do almost everything on the phone with a single tap. And then they have a whole gesture thing where you can simulate. So you tap and then suddenly it puts three little dots on the screen, like you've put your three fingers on the screen, and now you can use one finger to do the swipe gesture that'll cause the phone to act as if you had three fingers on the screen. Does that make sense?
A lot of neat stuff. Yep. Yeah. A lot of neat stuff in there. I'd read a little bit about assistive touch when they first introduced that. I believe iOS 6. But unless something has changed, I don't believe that's usable with VoiceOver. So it's not
probably
even
not
something I really play with. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it would be really useful that. Yeah. But I know people who use this because, you know, like on a phone, if you want to use three or four fingers, sometimes it can just be hard to get that many fingers on the screen.
Absolutely.
You know, so you can just have this thing and the little dot collapses down into this little box and you can kind of move it around the screen. So you can put it, you know, up in any corner that you want and it just sits there. And when you're interacting with stuff or when you're in an app, it'll change its opacity. So it you know, sort of fades to the background, but you can kind of still see it ghosted there. And then when you tap it, it comes back up. And so I've seen many a person's phone where I go and this feature is just turned on because there's just so many cool things that you can access. And prior to Apple adding in the control center, like I said, you could get quick access to some of the controls like rotate screen, lock screen, mute and unmute, those sorts of things. So a lot of people just used it almost as their little mini control center before we had control center.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very, very cool feature.
I like it a lot. So I don't personally use it. And like I said, if you ever break your home button, it works as a virtual home button too. So I know a lot of people who have broken home buttons on their phones. They don't get them fixed or don't want to pay to get them fixed. Then they just turn this feature on and continue to use the device.
Very, very, very handy. And I mean, you find more and more places like that where these accessibility features are of general use. And I think that also goes to show just how well thought out and well designed a lot of this stuff is from Apple's side.
Yeah, cool. Well, I want to finish up. I know we talked a little bit about the sort of competition. Did we leave anything out? First of all, is there anything critical that we maybe missed?
No, I think we've hit everything. The only other thing that might be kind of interesting on the VoiceOver standpoint, just a small thing, but if someone out there wants to play with VoiceOver and see how it works, one nice thing that was in there for a long time that they've kind of made even easier now is if you turn on VoiceOver, it changes the gestures, and there was an area where you could called VoiceOver Gesture Practice, and you could go in there and perform different gestures, and VoiceOver would tell you what they would do. And that's still there. But one thing that's also available is you used to have to drill in to get to that. So it was settings, general, accessibility, VoiceOver practice. Now on any iOS device, if VoiceOver is running, you can do a 4-finger double tap and experiment with gestures and see what they do when you have VoiceOver on without having to drill all the way in. So it's kind of a neat little feature if you want to play with VoiceOver.
Cool. Yeah. I the one thing I did to myself one time to sort of try this is there's also a feature when you've enabled VoiceOver, the screen curtain.
Yes.
Which basically blacks out your screen.
Which so is you actually
can't see anything.
It's actually a great feature for VoiceOver users for two reasons. One, you don't have to worry about people looking over your shoulder and seeing, what password you're typing in for your bank app or whatever it is. And two, saves battery life because you're not sucking the battery to keep the screen lit up while you're using the phone. So
yeah,
you can actually extend the battery life pretty significantly when by using that feature.
Yeah, and it's a great way if you want to really learn and force yourself to learn VoiceOver and be able to control your device completely by that. It's certainly a great way to try it out. Just make sure before you do it, you know how to get back out.
That's right. I've gotten many an email from someone that doesn't care about accessibility. It's just like, I turned VoiceOver on and now I can't use my phone anymore. How do I turn it off? Or on the Mac as well. I hit Command F5, which turns VoiceOver on the Mac, and now my computer's talking to me and it won't shut up and I can't make it stop.
Yeah, I've got little black boxes around everything.
Exactly. Yeah,
I get that one a lot. Oh, yeah, you've turned on VoiceOver. No. Don't worry, we'll help you out. So the last thing I just wanted to ask you about, I know we talked about Windows a little bit and some of the challenges over there. And I don't want to turn this against to an iOS versus Android sort of thing, but I am sort of curious what the state of accessibility is on Android versus iOS. Do you have a sense of that, or do you know?
A bit. I'm obviously not an Android user, but right. I certainly know people who've played with it. Android has, it's improving. It's nowhere near what Apple provides, but every release it gets better. I think the bigger problem is that they really don't, at this point in time, Android developers really don't have reasonably decent tools to make their apps accessible. So even if you get an Android phone, kind of like a stock Android phone, and accessibility for what's built in is reasonably good, that's pretty much what you're stuck with. You're gonna find some apps that work, but it's not gonna be the same, even close to the same experience you get on iOS at this point. Now, hopefully that will improve over time because competition is good and that is great, but. At this point, unless you've really got a good reason, I wouldn't mess too much with Android. And of course, you've got a lot of other issues there, just like the sighted users do with the fragmentation and everything else. So this app that maybe is accessible on this one phone is not going to be accessible on this phone, or is accessible in Jelly Bean is not accessible on Gingerbread, and so on and so forth. So you got a lot of problems there, but it's improving. It's got a long way to go.
Yeah, I mean, I would think one of the opportunities or areas would be, but because of some of the things you said earlier that I hadn't thought about, is maybe it creates as many problems as it solves, is the open nature of Android, I would imagine, would allow somebody to, write a app that can function as a screen reader or something across the device, right? Because you can run stuff in the background, things can access other things.
You,
and
You could probably do that to a degree, but mostly what we've seen so far, and I'm not an Android developer, so I don't know a lot of the technical limitations, but I know mostly what we've seen now is some of these things. Like, I know, I forget which company it was. I think it was Mobile Speak, which is an assistive tech company, but don't hold me to that. But there was a suite that came out that was like here's a way to browse the web, and here's a way to do email, and it was all these sort of custom email app, custom web app that sort of had like a screen reader built into them, and that sort of thing. So you've got some people experimenting with that. I don't believe there's any third party screen readers for Android at this point, though.
Right. Well, cool. I think we did a pretty good job updating everybody on sort of the state of accessibility on iOS. I'm gonna have to get you back, probably. It sounds like for Mavericks, but Josh, I want to really thank you for hanging out with us for about an hour or so and filling us in. I know that you're up to a bunch of stuff beyond just the podcast. You mentioned that you're a developer. You want to tell everybody sort of if they want to follow along with what you're doing and what you're up to, and maybe tell them a little bit about the stuff that you're developing.
All right. So I, for many, many years, have done development of audio games for the blind for a company called Draconis Entertainment. And you can find us either at draconisentertainment.com or dracoent.com, dracoent.com, which is a much more manageable domain name. So we do audio games, obviously primarily targeting, visually impaired people. And an audio game is basically like a video game, but there's no video. It's just all completely audio based. And we did this on Windows for years. Of course, I jumped ship from Windows and moved to OS X. And we kind of started from scratch and built up our own game engine. And I have a business partner who kind of handles the Windows side now. So we've got a cross-platform audio game engine, and we've got this year we released two games in the Mac App Store. We've got some iOS projects in the works, but you can find the two apps in the App Store. We've got one called Change Reaction, one word, and we've got one called Silver Dollar, also one word. Change Reaction is sort of an audio kind of like Tetris, sort of. It's basically stacks of coins that when you line up three in a row horizontally or vertically, they explode and add to your score. There's a lot more to the rules than that, but that's kind of in a nutshell. And Silver Dollar is a mini game, or I guess a collection of little mini games set in an Old West saloon. And you can play a one-armed bandit, get into a brawl, or shoot plates out of the air with your six shooter. So kind of fun stuff, and it's all audio based, and those are both available in the Mac App Store. And we got more stuff coming. We're working on an iOS project right now, and I can't really say anything else about that at the moment. Cool. but more cool stuff coming, and we're really, really excited, and check them out.
Very, very cool. And of course, check out the podcast and the website as well.
Maxcessibility.net, which is just accessibility with an M on the front of it. We've got the Maxcessibility Roundtable podcast, which is kind of the primary focus now. We do post news and things on the website occasionally. I read a review for VoiceOver with iOS 7 there as well. But the podcast is kind of our primary focus at this point. And you can follow me on Twitter at LionCourt, just like it sounds, or you can follow Maxcessibility at Maxcessibility as well.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks, Josh.
Thank you.
So there you go. There's accessibility in iOS 7. I know that I certainly learned a few things, and I hope that you did too. Again, big thank you to Josh. Be sure to check out what he's up to. Check out his podcast. Follow him on Twitter. He's a really, really great guy, as you can tell. And I love having him on. We need to get him on more frequently. And I'm going to get him back, I think, to talk about some of the updates to accessibility in Mavericks as well. So stay tuned for that and look forward to that. But I think with that, that is going to do it for the show for today. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank all of my show sponsors: Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, and Disc Label. Also, Text Expander Touch for your iPhone and iPad, as well as PDF Pen for iPhone and iPad. And they just came out with PDF Pen Scan Plus, which is a really cool iOS app that lets you scan documents with your phone. So you take a picture, they've got great tools for doing adjustments, and then more importantly, it does OCR, so it'll OCR your document and turn it into a PDF that you can use. You can then bring that into PDF Pen and put in your annotations, add your signatures. You can do all kinds of great stuff with it. And it's $4.99 on the App Store, so check that out, smilesoftware.com. Transporter by Connected Data. Get all the benefits of cloud storage, but with the control and security and privacy of a physical hard drive or NAS. You can get 10% off your own personal cloud by using the offer code MACCAST. Just head over to filetransporter.com/MACCAST to get all the details and to get your own transporter. Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets online. You can find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple products are worth by going to gazelle.com. And Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, online portfolio, or blog. You can get a free trial and 10% off by going to squarespace.com and using the offer code MACCAST10. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. And a big thank you to all of my sponsors for their support of the MACCAST. Big thank you to you for your support. Please keep your emails, your audio comments coming. I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, topic you'd like to hear covered on a future episode, you can send your emails to maccast@gmail.com. You can also leave a question on the hotline. The telephone number is 281-622-4269. 281-MAC-IAM-9. You can leave voicemail there. You can also leave voicemail on Skype. My Skype address is the MACCAST. And if you need show notes, links to anything that we talked about in this or any other episode of the MACCAST, you can find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. Check out the forum while you're there at forum.maccast.com. And if you'd like to follow me online, I'm on Twitter, twitter.com/MACCAST, or check out the Facebook page at facebook.com/TheMACCAST. We also have a Google Plus community, so if you're on Google Plus, just search for MACCAST over there, and I'm sure you'll find it. Also, YouTube channel, MACCAST on app.net, pretty much MACCAST everywhere. Just search MACCAST in Google, and you're going to find you're going to find something of interest related to the show. That'll do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.